We have Governor Ned Lamont joining us just days left of the 2025 legislative session. And let's talk about the biggest item that has to get done before the gavel drops on June 4th, which is the budget. Joining me now is Governor Lamont. And Governor, welcome back to the show. It sounds like concepts of the budget are there. And I'm just curious what that sort of looks like, because it hasn't obviously reached the House and the Senate just yet.
That is true. But Melissa, it was great to see you at the Yale Innovation Summit the other day. You know, 2,000 folks, entrepreneurs, that's how we got our economy growing. We're one of the fastest growing now in the region, which is a good place to be. It makes our budget a little bit easier because when you have a growing economy, that means you can, do more investments in education and not-for-profits and daycare and childcare and still have a honestly balanced budget. So I'm pretty sure we're going to get there. They'll probably vote on Monday, but that's not my world. That's the leaders.
And it was great to see you as well, Governor Lamont. Thank you for saying that. I noticed that in some of our partners in media, I'm wondering about the increases that could be coming. So for months, we know that House Speaker Ritter and the Senate President Looney, they've been calling for spending increases. I mean, for months, like I said, that go above the increases you had initially proposed in the beginning of session. Can you give us an idea with this sort of outlined budget you guys have talked about? Does it go above the increases you had already proposed? Like, are we looking at a non-sustainable budget?
No, it's sustainable. I feel very strongly about that. And but you're right. I have to reach a compromise in order to get the budget done. And when you're arguing about how much you increase funding for special ed, those arguments can be just as forceful as if you're talking about decreases in a different economic environment. But we got there. It's honestly balanced this year and next year and going forward. And I think people have some confidence. We're not raising taxes. That's always been one of my hallmarks, and that's not going to change.
I'm curious, Governor Lamont, there was a recent decision this month where we did have to go over the state spending cap, and it had to do with Medicaid. It had to do with that before we even know what's going to happen in Washington. I know we keep hearing about what's going on in Washington, obviously, but until we have a concrete, I would say a known fact of what kind of cuts we're looking at, I'm surprised we did this. I want to know why we did that.
We did it because in Connecticut and 49 other states, the cost of Medicaid is exponentially growing. It was probably a $300 million hit to our budget. And I couldn't figure out how to get that paid for on a timely basis without going up above the spending cap on a one-time basis. The good news is if I did it on an emergency basis, that would mean the spending cap does not go up permanently based on that. And that was helpful.
Okay, so just so I understand it, Governor Lamont, we couldn't do like a special session in August or something after we know what the federal cuts are going to be? That wasn't an option?
That's still an option. Not an option I lust after, but if, say, in September we find out there's going to be dramatic cuts to Medicaid or SNAP benefits, I have a rainy day fund with about $4 billion in it. It's supposed to be there to protect you against recessions. But maybe we'll put a little bit in there just to make sure the vulnerable are protected if there's some severe cuts coming out of Washington. But I got to reemphasize, as I do over and over again, there's no way the Connecticut taxpayer can make up all the shortfall that could be coming out of Washington. But let's wait and see how bad it is first.
So Governor Lamont is here. I noticed with the conversation, again, as you mentioned, it has to go to the House and the Senate before a budget does pass. But I noticed with this initial conversation, it is obviously yourself, it's Mr. Ritter and Mr. Looney, all of the Democratic Party. Why not have Republicans more present? And again, I'm not saying that from a partisan standpoint. I'm saying it from there are a lot of people in Connecticut who are either independent or Republican wondering, is this a supermajority coming up with this budget?
Well, I will tell you, credit where credit's due, the House Republicans, Tammy Nuccio in particular, came forward with a responsible Republican budget. And So I obviously met with her and Vinny offline a couple of times, and some of their ideas were incorporated into what we ended up with. I don't want to get into details on that. The Senate Republicans were nowhere to be seen. I mean, they didn't have a budget.
Really? I was told that they had a budget in, or just the House Republicans. I thought that the Senate Republicans had
the House Republicans. They came forward with a credible budget. The Senate Republicans had nothing. Didn't even agree with the House Republican budget. So they sort of made themselves a little irrelevant in the process. But I want a positive note. We worked pretty well with the House Republicans as well. I met with them. I can't speak for what, how Matt Ritter worked with them, but he usually works pretty closely with Vinny off the record.
Okay. And again, Governor Lamont is here. Let's go from, as you mentioned, Governor, we have to see obviously what this budget is going to look like. We don't have that language just yet. But you feel confident we will pass a budget. I do know a few days ago, I believe, and I don't want to misquote you, but I think you had been saying at first Democratic lawmakers were going to pass almost like a one-year budget instead of a two-year budget. You called that a mistake. So you feel like what at least is sort of been talked about behind closed doors, that is now more in line of what you wanted, a two-year budget.
It's a two-year budget. I felt very strongly about that. That's been our tradition going back 40 years. I don't want the dysfunction from Washington, D.C. to creep into Connecticut. Our superintendents of schools, our mayors, they need a document. They need a budget that's on time. And a two-year budget gives them some certainty so they can plan. And that's what we're going to do.
Agreed. So Governor Lamont is here. Let's move to the housing bill. You and I talked very briefly. I mean, so briefly. We passed, like you said, at Yale. And I think we had like four words because you had to get somewhere. So I wanted to talk about it here on the air. That housing bill. Governor Lamont, it is going to be taken up in the Senate. It could be today, tomorrow, early next week. You've already indicated, though, that you need to sign some kind of housing legislation, which I can understand. We're in a housing crisis. But this started out as a homeless study, an 11-sentence bill, and became a 90-plus page bill. And I want to know if you've read it yet.
Yep, I have been fully briefed on it, and I know what's in that bill. Look, it's going to be easy to demagogue. They'll demagogue it. You're taking away local control. You're taking away two-acre zoning, you know, all of which is totally untrue. What they do is incent towns to show us where they want to put housing. And I take it even further, Melissa. I say if you want to allow multifamily housing in a downtown area or next to a train station or something, and you're willing to pre-zone it, I'll give you relief on 830G because that gets everybody very nervous, and especially in Fairfield County. So I'm trying to be collaborative with the towns, but it's up to them to take the lead, not the state.
And I think, you know, in some degree, when you talk about a 94-page bill, there's obviously got to be good in it, certainly. And I'm with you. I don't want there to be this, you know, this idea of, oh, my gosh, we came out with just this monster thing that there's nothing good about it. However, there are some things that are really troublesome, quite frankly, Governor Lamont, even Democrats push back on. I mean, Bridgeport in particular, which is all Democratic for the most part, they went up to Hartford and said, look, that whole parking requirement that would be eliminated, that's a huge problem. I mean, I can't imagine anyone who's going to buy into a multifamily complex or whatever it may be and not have guaranteed parking. To me, that's just making a developer rich.
Slow down a second. Please don't read all the emails. And as you told me, you know, read the bill. What it says, I think, makes some sense. It says, rather than have citywide parking requirements, I want the local planning and zoning in Bridgeport or elsewhere, depending on where that, 10-unit apartment is, decide based upon that apartment where you want how much your parking you think it needs. Let's say it's next to a rail parking lot, which is empty, half the time. Maybe they don't need as much parking, but it'll be determined by your local town. It won't be determined by anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, that's not what the language almost seemed like when I was reading through it. But you're saying that it's still going to come down to local planning and zoning deciding if that parking lot would be sufficient for the housing complex that's being built.
Yeah, it's just making it now specific to that particular housing complex. Is there already a lot of parking next door because there's a movie theater or something? That type of analysis. I thought it made sense. But it's easy to demagogue. Oh, my God, they're taking away my right to have a parking place. That's what's going to be in the flyers.
I mean, but when you have, you know, we had a Democratic representative in Hartford who specifically talked about it. I have delegates here in Bridgeport who are Democratic who hate that part of it. So, I mean, I'm not demagoguing. That's what they're saying. They're saying in their cities, this is what it looks like. So I mean, that's what I'm being told by Democratic lawmakers who couldn't vote for this bill solely on the parking.
Yeah, I think it's really housing is just a red flag, especially in, you know, the suburban towns we know pretty well. Look, I've been down there in Greenwich for years. Every 2 years, like clockwork, so I get a flyer that has a high rise apartment building next to a, you know, ranch on 1 acre, say, don't let this happen to our town. It's been that way since the 80s. I think this is a responsible bill, but I'm going to take a hard look at it to make sure that our locals keep control, because that's very important.
We've got Governor Lamont here for a few more minutes talking about, obviously, the legislative session and some of the big ticket items, the budget being a huge one, probably the biggest one. I'd say followed by this housing bill, which has had a lot of controversy surrounding it. It's already passed the House. It moves on to the Senate. Governor Lamont, I know we'll move to other topics, but really quickly. So you do plan to pass some kind of housing legislation. How much do you feel like this could get watered down, though, in the Senate?
Senate's pretty liberal. I doubt they're going to water it down very much, Melissa. But I want your listeners to know, because I hear where you're coming from. I come from the suburbs. I'm going to watch this very carefully. I'm going to make sure that our towns have local control over what they want to do. I want them to decide where they want the housing to go, how they want to do it.
Okay, because I know when we talk about headlines, sort of on the other side of things, I do think a lot of the times I was talking to State Rep. Kadeem Roberts out of Norwalk, who is the vice chair of housing, and is very proud of this bill. And I had him on a couple times this month to talk about it. And one of the things that he and I, you know, I think came to an agreement about eventually was I said we have to stop also just thinking that these towns don't want to build housing. I look at towns like Fairfield, Westport, Darien, you know, Fairfield County, where they may be more hesitant to put housing in. But a lot of the reason for that is because we're actually not creating affordable housing. We are creating more and more complexes that are, sure, 830G compliant, but you're really only giving people maybe a few units that are affordable. I mean, I don't see where we're actually answering the call, which is why they now put these moratoriums in place saying we don't want to do 830G projects. But it makes it look like it's we don't want people moving into our neighborhoods and changing it. And I think there might be some truth to that, but I don't think that's the whole story either.
Well, I will tell you, Melissa, that I think 80 to 90% of the new housing in this state over the next 10 years is going to be built in our major cities. Our cities were 40, 50% bigger a couple generations ago. We're taking old empty commercial buildings and old parking lots and they're sitting there and turning them into housing. And fortunately, people want to be in Connecticut. They want to move to Connecticut. And we need our cities to be vibrant again. But to your bigger point, look at downtown Darien. I mean, they built a lot of housing downtown there. Same, I think, is true of Westport and Fairfield, as you say. So I'm trying to just speed things up, make it a little easier, but make sure that people have local control.
So again, we have Governor Lamont here. So much to talk about and so little time, unfortunately. So Governor Lamont, I want to move to crime really quickly because I spoke to the Waterbury police this week. Chief Spagnolo told me that this was the second shooting in 2 years at the mall there in Waterbury this week. Thank God no one died. But that stuck out to me. Again, another juvenile criminal suspect in this case. And then I hear that a couple days later, there are 16 teens in a Waterbury high school within 24 hours arrested for fighting. I'm curious if we're going to see any legislation passing this session or any focus on more penalties, especially to combat juvenile crime in the state.
Well, as you remember last year or 2 years ago, we greatly strengthened the gun laws. And if you've been picked up with an illegal gun, you're not getting back on the street. And we're being much more strict about that. This Waterbury thing, let me tell you, I mean, I was really impressed by Spagnolo and his team. They were there within 3 minutes. As you point out, a lot of these crimes, they knew each other.
Yep.
It's just a conflict that erupted. It was you know, maybe over a girl. And all of a sudden, what's this kid doing having a semi-automatic weapon that can shoot 7 rounds? And how many seconds is that? And all of a sudden, 5 people are hit. So, you know, A, the cops were there fast. B, thank God nobody was injured. C, West Waterbury has a full complement of police and the crime is going down. But that doesn't do anybody any comfort when these 5 people are hit. I just said, look, Waterbury's strong. I want you coming back to this mall as soon as it opens and say we're not going to be intimidated. And we're doing everything we can to get those kids off the street who carry illegal guns and more importantly, get those guns off the street.
But are we also doing things to, you know, to try and deter people from committing those types of crimes? I mean, I do think that's a big part of it when you've got kids who know that they're going to get a slap on the wrist and they're going to go back. I mean, when I heard Chief Spagnuolo say, yeah, we can't identify who it is right now. This was hours after it happened. He's like, I can't identify who the suspect is, but he's very familiar with police. 19 years old. So it's like, okay, so for his teenage years, you've known him and he keeps committing crimes. And to me, that means we're not deterring. We're not doing a good enough job deterring people from committing crimes in their juvenile years.
Well, I'll push back a bit. We strengthened the laws greatly, and I took the lead on this just a year or two ago, especially when it's a person who commits a gun-related crime. We're not slapping them on the wrist. We're making sure they get off the street. And we're enforcing that more and more strictly because I think it's really important. There was a sort of image out there that if you're young, you're not going to have consequences. That's not true anymore.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I know that we go by statistics a lot, Governor, but I think when I hear that we've got 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds who are committing repeat crimes, I'm wondering how are they doing it? It's not because they're behind bars, obviously, because they're back out on the streets. I don't know if they're paying tough penalties or their parents are just doing it. I'm not trying to like insinuate anything, but to me, I don't know what we are doing penalty wise or deterring wise from making it stop, making the repeat offenders stop.
Well, I wouldn't deny statistics because they're also known as facts. So it's good to see that our cops are making real progress there and keeping our community safe. So I don't want to scare people, but to your bigger point, we got to make sure those repeat offenders are not back out there on the street. That means we have to have our cops back on that. We got to make sure the laws reflect that. I greatly know that we have strengthened laws over the last couple of years. If there's more we got to do, we'll revisit it.
Would that be repealing any part of the police accountability law?
I don't think so. I mean, the police accountability law, as you maybe remember, already said, cops are going to be sued willy-nilly. We'll never be able to hire a cop. And that all was just, politics. I think Judge Devlin, who just retired, found that because of the police accountability law, it was able to show the population that, look, our cops are doing really good work. And in those three or four those many cases he investigated, he came out in support of what the cop did, I think, in 99% of the cases. So I think it gave people a lot more confidence in policing.
I agree, Governor Lamont. I don't think it was all bad. Absolutely. I agree, especially when they go through the investigations with state police. But I have heard from municipal and state police as early as this hour telling me that there are too many restrictions still that stem from that law.
Well, the main piece of that law was that, we had an independent person that took a look if there was a crime that was needed investigating. And that's just what Judge Devlin did. And I think you'll find there were a lot of parade of horribles that could have happened that when 5 years ago that bill passed. I think you can talk to Spagnuolo. I think you can talk to most of the cops and say, I think it's working pretty well. And most importantly, it's building confidence in our police, which I think is so important for community policing.
Governor Lamont, unfortunately, we have run out of time, but I really appreciate all your time here on WICC. Thank you.
All right. See you soon, Melissa.